Do you lie awake at night wishing for something better? When you look at your future a year from now, is there a light at the end of that tunnel? Do you feel like you were meant for something more? Opportunity will not come knocking on your door unless you're out there looking for it. How do you do it? Our guests on the Empower Radio Show will be sharing their secret to success. We'll be bringing you authors, speakers, entrepreneurs from many different fields who come from various backgrounds. They will be sharing their stories of success and of early failures. You'll hear about the challenges they faced when they launched their ideas and the creative ways that they overcame obstacles. Our guests will inspire you to find your way down the path to success in this ever-changing world. Jump on board and become empowered.
Welcome, welcome. So glad that you're joining us today on Empower Radio Show. This is Linda Bayou-Studdos, and I am your host today. Thank you so much for joining us, and I always like to tell you that, you know, time is that one commodity that you just can't get back. So when someone spends time with you, value that, because it's not like money. They can't get it back. So I appreciate so much you taking time out of your busy day today and spending a few minutes with us. If you've missed some of our interviews, be sure to check us out on Facebook at Empower Radio Show, Twitter, Empower Radio Show, and also our website is Empower Radio Show. Now, I'm a little tricky about the spelling of that, so it's spelled the letter M and the word power, radio show. So, again, that's the letter M, the word power, radio show. If you have any questions or if you have a topic that you would like to present on the show, if you think it would be a great fit for our audience, just send me an email. And guess what? That email address is empowerradioshow@gmail.com. And I'd be happy to talk to you about that opportunity. Now, today, you are in for a real treat, folks. Today's guest is Elaine Williams. And Elaine is the girl next door who appeared to have had it all. You know, the brains, the charm, the talent. You know, she was the drill team captain, and she was the National Honor Society member. She was on the dean's list. She was involved in her choir and community. You know, what else could the girl ask for? She had everything. But what she hid was she was also a victim of emotional and sexual assault. And realizing it takes the same – what she realized is taking just – the same amount of energy goes into feeling miserable as it would be to feel strong. So it you have to sometimes take a moment and realize that you don't want to feed something that continuously harms you. And that's when she started her journey into a healthy life. Now, Elaine is an award-winning stand-up comedian, so you know you're going to have fun today. She's appeared on Saturday Night Live, HBO, ABC, NBC, Fox, and has been featured in the New York Times. She's the author of Stop the Madness, and today she is a certified life coach, and she uses her comedic talent to engage audiences in discovering the way to your heart and not through your stomach with addiction, or happiness is not found in a bottle. So please help me welcome Elaine Williams. Elaine, thank you so much for being here today.
Well, thank you. Thank you for that beautiful introduction, and thank you for having me.
Absolutely. I tell you what, you have an incredible story, and it's one that many of us have faced, maybe not exactly your story, but so many people struggle with something that they don't bring forward every day. People that know you every day, they don't necessarily know what you've been through. So talk to me a little bit about that girl next door and what that life looks like, and how you manage to keep that such a secret.
Sure. You know, I grew up in you know, a middle class family. We had money. We didn't. My parents divorced when I was 4, and at the time, nobody got divorced back then in the early 70s. So, you know, I mean, thank goodness, in some ways I would say the internet is the best of times, the worst of times, because there's so much more information out now. But, you know, I grew up and we looked like things were together on the outside, but there was alcoholism and addiction and lots of dark things happening in my family with my stepmother and, you know, extended families too. So I think, you know, as we survive, we learn how to survive. We learn to project things and I poured myself into school and activities, which is pretty common for a lot of functioning addicts. I hope I answered the question.
Absolutely. And, you know, at that age, as you're growing up, you just want to be like everybody else, right? So you certainly don't want to let anyone know that you're different. So I'm sure that was quite a struggle for you as well, is to maintain that facade that I'm like everybody else.
You know, it was, and I'm coming up on 15 years of sobriety in August, God willing, and I keep learning more and more and more about the disease of addiction and also the traits of an addictive personality, because I feel like the more I learn and can integrate and then can share with others. And one of the things I learned a couple of years ago was that most addicts are very sensitive, and that's part of the reason we feel the need to want to medicate ourselves. And that's also part of the culture here in America too. You know, if you don't feel good, take a pill, grab a chip, grab a Coke, grab a beer. You know, it's part of our culture to sort of reach for things outside of ourselves to help us change our state. And I talk about that a lot when I get to go talk to my audiences. And then, yeah, growing up, it's very hard to go to school and be like, oh, my stepmother hit me and my dad didn't help me. And then I ate a pizza and then I took 15 laxatives. You know, it's not something you want to go tell a popular kid about, and they're talking about what movie they watched. You know, it's that's, you just can't do that. Mm-hmm.
Right. So that addiction carried forward into your high school and into your 20s. Is that right?
Sure. It's interesting, again, the more I learn, I was being molested by family members, not my father, family members and neighborhood boys. And it's very common for men and women who have been, especially women, though, who have been any kind of weird sexual stuff, to become weird with food and develop eating disorders. It's a very common connection. And then, like, this happens with a lot of women too, a lot of times the addictions morph. So I was binging and purging at a very early age. My stepmother used to tell me I was fat. I was never fat. I looked at the pictures. In fact, I found one where my knees were kind of knobby, and I was like, oh, wow. I was just not like a tall Barbie girl. And I didn't, you know, I grew up in Dallas where I felt like I was supposed to look like a Dallas Cowboy cheerleader, but I was always sort of short and muscular. And, you know, and it was the 80s with the big hair and the dynasty look. So I was like, I don't belong, you know. And I think that that is a pretty common feeling for a lot of us. I don't belong. I'm not tall enough. I'm not pretty enough. I'm not enough. And so my addiction is more from food, binging and purging and laxatives. And then in high school, I drank some. And then when I got to college, I was so grateful to be out of that house. There had been so much physical, emotional, and sexual abuse. I was just so excited to be free. And I also knew that my grades were very important to me. So I made a promise that as long as I made good grades, I could do anything. And I'm really lucky I didn't kill myself, because I really was on a mission of, I think it was just a way for me to try to deal with the pain that I had been suppressing and didn't know how to articulate or get help about.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, Aline, it just amazes me that you were able to get through this even up to the age of college in your 20s without any professional help. Is that kind of a common thread that you see as well, that victims of emotional or sexual abuse, they don't seek out help?
Well, it's interesting, and I'm hoping that it has changed since, you know, my teenage years. Ironically, I was in some form of therapy as a preteen, but because it was a family therapist and we were all going, and nobody was really talking about the elephant in the room, which was my stepmother's alcoholism. I was the problem child. I was the middle child. My mother was the issue. Like, it's so interesting. And somehow we had enrolled this therapist into not talking about the truth. I guess we were all lying, in a sense. So even though I had had the experience of therapy, which I'm so grateful for, I did not feel safe enough to talk about what was really going on. And it was interesting because all of the energy was, a lot of it was focused on me. My stepbrother was my stepmother's son from another marriage, and he could do no wrong, although he was doing a lot of illegal things and getting into trouble with the law. He wrecked 8 sports cars in 2 years, and they just kept buying him a new one. And then my sister was younger and the type B, so I was sort of like the lightning rod for the family. And I think that can be common, too, in family dynamics. And I was trying to get help, but I did not know where to go. I think what saved my life was I had a choir director who kind of was my surrogate mother. And I have thanked her profusely, and I know that she has been that for many, many people. She was really just an amazing beam of energy and light for lots of us at that high school.
Now, Elaine, you know, we hear a lot about abuse on, you know, the internet, on television, on the news. How is it still kept as secret as it was when you were growing up?
Yes and no. I think here's my dream. So in the 50s, we had that show, I Love Lucy, right? Ricky! You know, and they were married in real life and on TV, but it was the 50s, so they had single beds, and you could not even say the word pregnant because that meant somebody had sex. Like, that's how repressed we were as a society, right? And nowadays, we're like, oh, my gosh, she's having a baby. What to expect when you're expecting? What to expect when you might be? You know, it's part of everyday vernacular. People have parties in the delivery rooms. There are videos of people giving birth. We have come so far as like, hey, this is part of life. That's how we have babies. Mm-hmm. That's how we have our families. And so that is my dream and hope, that we can continue the conversation about addiction, about mental illness, about depression, about bipolar, about different issues. Not that we have to wallow in them or be dramatic in them, or God knows we don't want to do cyberbullying or any of that stuff, but that we can talk about it without the stigma, so that we can help get help, help raise awareness. We don't have to wallow, but that we can go, this is part of being human. This is part of where we are today in American culture. I, you know, I deal with the public on a daily basis, and I think that the state of mental health in this country is in, it's a major epidemic. I think there are a lot of undiagnosed bipolars. There are a lot of people who come into AA who were trying to manage their incredible mood swings with alcohol, which we all know is a depressant, which is not the best way to do that. That is my dream, that we can just be like, oh, yeah, she had some stuff happen. sexually. Okay, go to that group. Oh, yeah, he's got some issues with personality. So go to that group. Go. Oh, this doctor is great. Like, that it doesn't have to have the stigma that we, you know, we don't have to wallow in it, but that we can talk about it and people don't feel like they're going to be judged and made fun of. That's my dream. That's my dream.
So you're not, you're saying that it's not anymore an epidemic now as it was in the 50s. It's just that we are beginning to talk about it a little bit, not, certainly not to the degree that you think that we need to reach, but that we have pulled the covers back, so to speak, and revealed that there are problems in some of our families, the dysfunctional problems in some of our families, and we need to provide them with the help. It's not about judging. It's about providing them with the help that they need to get through that. So tell me, Elaine, what are you doing to help those victims out there or to help raise awareness in these areas?
Well, thank you for that question. I blog about Huffington Post, and in fact, I'm due to send in a draft today, and they are doing so much on the college front about raising awareness. There's been a lot of stuff in the news about sexual assault on college campuses and the double standard for athletes and fraternities about the, you know, the rules don't apply to me because I'm from a wealthy family or a powerful family or I'm an athlete. And unfortunately, we do see that in the news. And one of my things is, like, it's not just a college issue. It's not just a fraternity issue. It's all of our issues. You know, as I said before, most of us are affected by addiction in some way, from a friend, a family member, or personally. And the statistics are insane. One out of every four females is assaulted on a college campus. And the stats are one out of every six for guys. And I think the number is higher because a lot of things are still not going reported. And, again, there's the stigma and the shame. You know, part of my story is, so stuff happened when I was growing up in my household, and then because I had low self-esteem, because I had been abused, because I had addiction and very disregard for my life, I would put myself in dangerous situations. And I was in Padre in spring break my freshman year, and I found myself in a closet with guys going in and out, and I had lost my friends, and I had no idea how I got there. I had no idea how I got home. And I never, you know, I felt so much shame about it. I just sort of pushed it in the back of my mind. And then later on, when I was asked if I could speak about it, I realized, wow, that was illegal and immoral what happened. But I never even, all I could think of was I was bad and wrong, that I was there. I never should have, you know, it was all my fault. I internalized everything. Wow. And I think that that happens a lot. And every time I speak at a college, I have kids coming up, crying, hugging me, thanking me, telling me that happened to me, my friend, my sister, my boyfriend, gay, straight, all different, you know, races, whatever you want to, you know, all different kinds, walks of life. And a lot of times they say, I've never told anybody this before, but, and I always feel so honored that they trust me, and I always get their information so that I can keep an eye on them and make sure that they get into some kind of therapy or support at the school. And I feel like that is, I'm the bridge. Mm-hmm. And because I'm so goofy and vulnerable, and I do use comedy because people stop breathing, you know, the minute you say sexual assault, people clench and they go into fight or flight. And when you go into fight or flight, your blood leaves your brain and goes into your body as a defense mechanism. So you're not present mentally. Mentally, you have left the building. So it's no wonder we have these issues because we are just now learning how to talk about them. So I use yoga breaths. I'll say, oh, no one's breathing. I'm going to tell a fart joke. You know, it's very irreverent. But I always say I'm not making fun of anybody else's stuff. I make fun of myself because it helps me heal and it helps us learn. So I use some non-traditional things, but I feel like it's more effective and it has more of an impact, and that's the goal, that we can stop stop this from happening.
Well, and if you're speaking to a younger generation, I could see where it would be very uncomfortable for them to listen to someone talk about the topic of sexual assault or, you know, just emotional abuse as well. So by removing their defenses, so to speak, with humor, it allows you to get in and for them to, like you said, listen when they may not have before. So is that why you wrote the book, Stop the Madness?
That's one of the reasons. I feel like I'm so irreverent, but my goal for that book was that it's on everybody's toilet. And when I said that the first time, the interviewer was like, what? And I said, because here's the deal. If you think that you might have a drinking problem or a drug problem or eating or something, you don't want anyone to know. You feel ashamed. You know, you're still grappling with that inside yourself. But how many times, you know, have you been at a party or an office and you see a book and you're like, oh, I don't want anyone to see me grabbing that, right? But I always say, put it on the toilet because you're by yourself, you know. And so my goal is that it can, you know, it's a tip book, but that you can learn something or learn where you can go to get more information. Yes, and I wrote it because I wanted it to be fun and approachable, because as much as I love 12-step work, some of the books are intimidating and some of the wording is very old vernacular from the 30s. And you know, I love all spiritual stuff. I consider myself that we're all on a spiritual journey, but some of the books I have found very challenging to digest. Course in Miracles, I've tried to read that book like 50 times, it's too much for me. I know it's helped a lot of other people, but I'm all about like whatever helps you, you know, reach your potential and be healthy. For some people, that's church. For some people, that's yoga. For some people, you know. And so that was my hope, that, you know, it's a very simple book, but that it's accessible and you can pick it up and kind of flip through it. You can read it from, you know, front to back, or you can just kind of jump around. I wanted it to be as accessible and simple as possible.
Mm-hmm. And I appreciate you doing that, because there are times when, to begin with, our minds are going 100 miles an hour in this this society. And I'm with you that if someone translates what is said in the Course in Miracles, I understand that. But for me to try to read it, I just don't understand what I'm reading. So it's great for you to put a very complex and uncomfortable topic in a way that it's easy for people to read, because we're moving so fast, Elaine, that if I read something once and I don't get it, I may not go back to it. But if I can pick something up and quickly get a bite of information, then I'll pick it up again next time. So I appreciate you doing that. That's so needed out there. It definitely is.
Thank you. So, yeah, and I'm working on an e-book too.
No, go ahead.
That is going to be specifically a new book. It's kind of like a series. And this one is just an ebook form for now, and it's specifically about sexual assault and raising awareness and prevention and how to keep each other safe. And it's, you know, focused on college campuses, but I am hoping to bring it into high schools as well.
Mm-hmm. And have you completed that book yet, or are you still working on that?
Almost. I'm editing, and we just finished the cover, so I will have that on Amazon Kindle shortly and on my webpage.
Okay. What's the name of that book?
Right now we're calling it Stop the Madness, you know, Stop the Madness, Raising Awareness About Sexual Assault.
Okay. Very good. And so they, the listeners can go on to Amazon to find its availability?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Very good. And while
and
we're at
the
stopping
to,
point.
Sorry. Yeah, Elaine Williams
Live.
Say,
perfect.
Elaine Williams Live, yes.
Okay, very good. So if someone is listening and they want more information, not just about the book and not just about you, but they want to know more about how you can help them to bring awareness in their community, Elaine, how would they reach you?
I think the best way is Elaine Williams Live and my booking line, which is 646-526-3522.
Okay. Can you tell us that one more time?
Absolutely. 646-526-3522.
So that, and we'll, folks, if you didn't get that, we'll certainly repeat it again. You know I'm good about repeating contact information multiple times in the interview. So just hang on, because we'll certainly repeat that again at the end of the interview. Elaine, what is it that you want parents to know out there? What is it that you want young people to know out there? What message do you want to convey to them about emotional or sexual abuse that could help them? If they're sitting in front of you.
Let's just
imagine that somebody's sitting right in front of you. What do you want to tell them?
I would say, if this has happened to you or a friend or a loved one, you're going to be okay. You are not alone. Unfortunately, this happens all the time, way more than we realize or care to acknowledge. And that's okay. Like, the goal is to obviously stop this, but the other goal is to have resources and be able to deal with this in a whole new way, in a whole new level. Because that's part of the problem is stuff happens, but then as a culture, we're so suppressed, repressed about sexual stuff. Most of the time when it is reported or dealt with, it is not handled well by professionals and personally. So it's going to be okay. You're not alone. There is help and there is hope, and you're going to be able to heal this, and it does not have to affect the rest of your life.
Well, Elaine, you're certainly an example of someone who has pulled through a very difficult childhood, and not only have you created this incredible career and being on HBO Saturday Night Live and all of the networks, but you're also taking that that experience and helping others in the community. Now, are there hotlines? Are there organizations that maybe a teen could contact? And if they're listening to us today and they realize, I do need some help, are there organizations that can help them that you might recommend?
Yes. There is Alateen, A-L-A-T-E-E-N, and that program is profound. It's really great. And there's also Al-Anon, and that is really for anybody who has been affected by addiction. And again, pretty much all of us really should be going to these meetings. It's an amazing program. It's free, and it's a great way to learn about the disease of addiction and that you didn't cause it, you cannot cure it, and you cannot control it, which is so helpful, and sort of surrendering and letting go and dropping the rope. And in go ahead, please.
No, go ahead.
I was just going to make one other suggestion, because I'm sure your listeners are from all over. in almost every community, there is some kind of outreach, and some communities have more than others. But it's always a good thing to go on the internet and see, you know, what is available for you locally. One of the coolest things I think is there are 12-step meetings everywhere, everywhere. As a touring comedian and speaker, I have gone to meetings in tiny little towns in Pennsylvania and in upstate Washington State where they filmed the Twilight movies in Squim. Like, there are 12-step meetings all over the place. You have to call and check the internet and dig. But I went to a meeting in West Texas in Alpine 2 spring breaks ago. There is so much out there for free. Sometimes you just have to dig a little bit. And sometimes it is a little confusing because sometimes the rehabs get the first place in Google and those cost money, but there's tons of information out there. And that's, I'm going to be including more of those resources in my book, Stop the Madness, Raising Awareness About Sexual Assault, so that there's, I'm just going to keep gathering more and more because, you know, it's a lot of them change, but we're so lucky. There's telephone meetings. I mean, we have so much at our fingertips. We just have to sometimes do a little bit of research.
Wow. Wow. You know, and we have, you mentioned at the very beginning of the interview that in the 70s, you didn't necessarily have access to that because we didn't have the internet. But now the internet has opened up access to organizations, to help, to people that we would not have been able to get to back in the 70s, back in the 80s. You know, in the early 90s, you still couldn't have gotten that. But everybody is on the internet now, and all the information is there as well. So, folks, if you are looking for something, just like Elaine says, just go out there and start looking. Just go out on the internet and Google it, because there will be free meetings in your area. And I had not ever heard of the telephone meetings, Elaine. I think that's a fabulous idea.
Yes, and I want to just put that out there. My contact, again, is at Elaine Williams Live. If you are confused, email me. I'm happy to point you in the right direction, or if you're not sure about something. But, yes, there are 12-step phone meetings for all kinds of, you know, not just AA meetings. There are 12-step podcasts for free.
Wow.
That you can download and listen to. There are 12-step radio things. Sorry, my technology is still, I'm still evolving. There's so much free stuff out there, which I know can be overwhelming, but, you know, with a little bit of digging, or if you're not sure, feel free to email me. But there's so much stuff out there about recovery and connection and just knowing that you're not alone and that somebody else has been through exactly what you're going through. Part of the disease of addiction is feeling like you're all alone and you're not connected. And one of the best things in the world is knowing, oh my gosh, other people have been through this. I'm not crazy. Wow. It's just so healing to be able to identify and hear other people express things that you thought you were the only one feeling that. It's like, oh, and it's like together we can accomplish so much.
Because it is such a secret and has been kept a secret their entire life, I'm sure. And just to know that not only someone has been through it, but they came through it and they're living a very happy life now. So there is,
you know,
that light.
Yes, and it's, you know, I was talking with one of my AA buddies. I have, like, these big brothers, you know, and unfortunately, you know, we hear about the celebrities that are in and out of rehabs and, you know, they're you know, the jokes, the punchlines. But there are so many people who have gotten sober and they have created amazing, you know, service-oriented, beautiful lives and they're living sober, wonderful, you know, they have families and careers and they give back. And you know, sometimes we only hear about the ones who are in and out and not like all of the success stories. You know, and another thing I wanted to talk about is, you know, we spend so much energy and time, billions of dollars on rehabs and cleaning up the messes, addiction, you know, drunk driving. You know, every year we tell people don't drink and drive, and every year there are thousands of people who are injured or die because of drinking under the influence of alcohol and drugs. And what if we could focus more on prevention and education? You know, they're coming out with more and more studies about that addiction is, there are some genetic factors, there's some genetic things with the brain, and we know that when you have too much alcohol or drugs, brain damage actually happens. And then if we can educate teenagers, hey, if you come from a family of alcoholics and you can wait until you're 21 to drink, you're 50% less likely to become an alcoholic yourself. Like, to me, that should be part of health class in every high school in the country. You know, there's so much more we can be doing, spending our resources, time and energy and money educating versus cleaning up the mess afterwards. That's one of my other big goals.
And that's a really good point, Elaine, is that if we can educate our high school kids, middle school, because they're starting
middle
younger
school.
And younger.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep.
It just amazes me to think that middle school, well, what are we talking about, 12, 13, 14-year-olds that are drinking?
That
blows my mind.
Yeah, it's starting earlier and earlier. So, and I get, like, if you're a parent, you know, I can understand how you don't want someone talking about alcohol and drugs to your third grader and putting ideas in their head that maybe they haven't been exposed to yet. So I get that some communities are different than others. But again, if we can have it more in the vernacular and, you know, not have the stigma of it, we can have it in, like, hey, this is part of, you know, you learn about the birds and the bees, but we also have to talk about this and this, you know. And that's also one of my big points, Linda, is we get a lot of mixed messages in our culture about sex. You know, we have this country built on, we still have sort of the pilgrim, you know, values of way to get married, and marriage is sacred, and whatever your religious views are, you know, respect and honor whatever you believe in. And, you know, at the same time, if you look at the media, we use sex to sell everything in this country. Football, cars, fashion, sunglasses, barbecue sandwiches. Like, we use sex to sell everything because it's such a primal, powerful, subconscious driving force. So, you know, I met one of the top designers at a charity event for AA, and I asked her, I said, what is going on with advertising, and, you know, especially towards teenagers and even preteens? And she said, well, Calvin did it first, which blew me away. This woman was a mother. And I said, okay. And I said, how can you please explain this to me? Because, like, the American Apparel ads look like pornography to me. And they have 14-year-old girls that, I mean, it's insane to me what's happening with some of these advertisements. And she said, everything is so fragmented these days with the media. We would rather make a bad impression than no impression. And I tell that story everywhere I speak because, to me, that is capitalism run wild. Like, we would rather sell our clothes, products, whatever, and not care about any kind of implications, damage it's doing. You know, it's all about, we have to sell our stuff in this competitive market no matter the cost. And it's horrifying to me.
One more time, while we've got this quick stop, where would they find more information about you, find information about your booking you as a speaker, whether it's corporate, community, education? Where would they find that information, Elaine?
Sure. 646 526-3522 is my booking line. And then my webpage is ElaineWilliamsLive.com. ElaineWilliamsLive.com. And Elaine is spelled E-L-A-I-N-E. Williams, just like how it sounds, up W-I-L-L-I-A-M-S, live, L-I-V-E.com. I love to hear from you. And I was just thinking how I feel like I've been kind of heavy. And one of the things I do love to have fun with people is I love to make fun of, you know, when I say, we're going to talk about sex, and everyone goes, oh, you know. And so I love to tell jokes about, you know, how many people got the birds and bees talk and what people are saying, how their parents just said, oh, go on Facebook, go watch TV. And I love to make fun of how, you know, because I think a lot of us are confused or feel giggly or awkward when we talk about sex. And so I love to use, that's the one place I really love to use humor, just in starting the conversation. You know, and I love it when you have a bunch of 16-year-olds or 19-year-olds, and I say, where did you learn about sex? And they all are like, you know. And I say, you know, did you want to talk to your parents? And everyone's like, no. And then I say, what about church or synagogue? No, that's weird. School, you can get in trouble. Internet, that's creepy, weird, ew. Like, where do we talk about sex? And then people are like, with my friends. And I'm always like, oh, yeah, that's always a great wealth of knowledge from your peers who are the same age. Like, it's no wonder, you know, and I just talk about this, you know, like, think about it. You're a teenager. You've got all these hormones pulsing through you. You feel awkward. You don't want to talk to your parents, whatever. And then you're just walking around life. And if you have a computer or you're at the, you know, by the magazines or billboards, what's coming at you? Images with sex. Images with sex. Images with sex, right? And I'm not talking about pornography. I'm talking about day-to-day advertising in this country. You know, we've got girls in Daisy Duke short shorts with barbecue sandwiches. We've got girls with the beer football, like whatever's coming at you, right? We've got these models with the six-packs, the Abercrombie and Finch. They're naked. They're naked models in the stores in New York City. They have like a leaf over them. So we've got all these images coming at us, and we're getting hit because we're animals and our hormones. And so we're getting all these sort of sensations and thoughts and feelings coming at us. And then we have no place to express or talk about what's coming at us with the advertisements. Can you see the confusion and the mixed messages?
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. And folks, the next time you watch television, and I think we've become a little desensitized to it, and we don't see it. So next time you watch television, watching the commercials, watch, you know, maybe just one of the prime time comedies, just look at what is being worn. Look at the suggestive way they present women. Just kind of be open to that. I think you're going to be surprised how much you overlook. And I think we need to be more selective with what we let our kids watch, you know, even from a very young age. So that's a very, very good point, Elaine, that we can all take action on right there. That's something small, but it can make a huge difference.
And I think that's why I know for me, I like to use humor because it helps remind me to have compassion. You know, I'm not a parent. I am glad I'm not a parent because I think I would be, you know, people always, and one of my jokes is, you know, I say I tried to have kids, but I couldn't because I have white carpets. And the parents always like crack up at that, you know. but I, thank you. I think it's, you know, I think as a parent, it's, there is so much to navigate, so much more with TV and internet and everything so coming at us. And I don't propose that I have all of the answers. I'm just hoping to help raise awareness and bring some levity to some tough subjects so that we can at least have more conversations and steer people towards healthier choices. whatever that means to you. I personally am very selective with what I watch because I know that I'm very sensitive. My sister is amazing with her kids and what she has them watch or not, and I really respect and honor, you know, how strict she is with them, and I think that that can be helpful. And I get it. Like, if you're a single parent and you're working three jobs to put food on the table, that's probably not a concern of yours. So, you know, I'm certainly not passing judgment. I'm just trying to, you know, propose some new awareness and conversations.
Mm-hmm. Most definitely. And I think that some of this has also seeped into the gaming world, because a lot of the games, technology, you know, the video games are just one step from being a being graded pornography, as far as I'm concerned.
Yes, that is a topic I have started to research a little bit, and it's, you know, I feel like I need to keep, you know, focusing on, you know, my main, what I know more about, which is addiction and assault. But I do think, I mean, they're doing studies. Yeah, that's a hot potato there. So
Yeah. Well, Elaine, thanks so much for sharing all of this with us. And I know that that there are listeners out there that you struck a chord with. I know that there are people out there that you are going to reach that you never would have been able to reach otherwise. Now, we've got those last three questions of the show that I always ask all of my guests. Are you ready for those?
I am. I thought about them a lot.
Awesome. So the first question is, when faced with obstacles, what kept you going?
That's such a great question. A couple of things came to mind. Even though I, you know, was in the throes of addiction for a long time, I still believed in God. And I feel like God speaks through other people sometimes. And every once in a while, I feel like I would get a sign. And even if I didn't understand things, I feel like God sent me angels as friends. Mm-hmm. So I feel like for me, that was a combination of you know, a belief in something greater than myself, even when I was really down and out. And then no matter what was going on in my life, I mean, I had abusive boyfriends, and I remember I always seemed to have a couple of friends who were, like, rooting for me, or, you know, I had a therapist who saw me for free for years. Like, I always had angels around me, and I, you know, I would encourage people, like, sometimes we have these angels and we don't even realize that. But I would say that mm-hmm. was really one of the things that just kept me going through some dark times.
Yeah, very good, very good. And I think that sometimes in those dark times, that is the only shred of hope that we have, is having that faith that there is a higher power that's going to take care of you. The next question is, other than a coach, influenced you the most?
That was so hard to pick, you know, and I would, I have to say recently, I have really been getting into Ken Burns. He makes documentaries, and the more I get to know who he is, I have been so moved by him. He was a filmmaker. His mother died when he was 11, which was devastating, I think. You know, it's so hard. And he became fascinated with history and pictures. And he created the whole Ken Burns effect, where a camera will zoom into a still picture or fade across. And he has done so many beautiful, thought-provoking, historically accurate, but also entertaining and inspiring documentaries. He did the documentary on American baseball and the Civil War. He did another one on World War II. But the two that have just inspired me the very most are his documentary on jazz, because it's truly one of the few American art forms, and it's such a part of our culture and history. And it's inspiring, and it's also sad about the racism stuff. But he delved really into that. And then he also did a documentary about the Roosevelts that blew me away. And I, all three of them were so from very rich, privileged families, and they made their life's work about giving back and helping the country and moving things forward. And they, it was not easy. And a lot of their counterparts and other people in their family were like living the good life of tea and travel. And Teddy and Eleanor and FDR, I mean, I was blown away. And I, to me, that's what inspires me, of like people who made their life's work about helping the planet and doing good and using their power for good. That has always inspired me. So it's sort of a combination of Ken Burns and then, you know, the Roosevelts just blew me away.
I'll have to look at that. That sounds very interesting. I'm not familiar with his work. If I am, I'm not familiar with his name. So thanks for sharing that. The last question is there one thing you wish you had known early on that would have saved you money and time that you want to share with our listeners?
Oh, I'm like, how long do you have?
right.
Oh, there's a lot. I think if there's one thing I had to pick, is that everybody has an agenda. And I was naive with some arrogance, which can be very dangerous. And I made quite a few very bad business decisions, not realizing that people had an agenda with me, which was to make money off of me and my naivete, and that I really thought people wanted to help me because of what I had been through, and they were enrolled in, like, my life vision, and I really see now that that was, you know, ignorant and egotistical, and I, you know, I have had an interesting long lesson in repairing things from that. And obviously I needed to have that experience, but I really wish I had thought things through. That's one of my things that I say to my audiences, think it through. Think it through. Think it all the way through. And, you know, just because someone seems really eager and really into you and is excited, you know, they probably have an agenda too. And it's not cynical or mean to think like that. It's smart. It's, you know, just, and that's part of the whole think it through. Oh, this person is awesome. And what are they saying? Great. And what are they doing? Very different things. So probably a lot to that. But, yeah.
Elaine, again, thank you so much for opening up, for being honest, to allow others to see what you went through, because I am sure that it has been painful for you to go through that and to be able to share that with others so that they don't necessarily have to go through that pain is truly a gift from you to them. So I applaud you and thank you so much for doing that.
Thank you, Linda. Is there one more thing I can add on? Are we?
Absolutely.
Okay. I was thinking, you know, I feel like this has been, you know, just a little bit heavy, and I wanted to just say with one other thing, you know, I moved to New York City. I thought I was supposed to be doing musical theater, and the singing is, you know, like the Olympics, but people kept saying, you're really funny, you're really funny, you're really funny. And the first time I did stand-up comedy in front of an audience, and I saw people bent over laughing when I was talking about my family, I had that light bulb moment of, oh my gosh, now my life makes sense. I'm supposed to help people. And I'm so grateful that I found comedy, because it really did help me lighten up and heal. And I encourage everybody, one of my biggest things is, do something every day that you have fun with, and if you can watch 2 minutes, 5 minutes of YouTube comedy, it is such a great way to release energy, raise your serotonin levels to the feel-good levels in your brain, and raise your vibration. No matter what's going on, I just think that laughter and comedy can be so incredibly healing. It's free. It burns calories. So that's just one that I kind of wanted to lead people on. No matter like what you've been through, there's hope and there's help and there's healing.
Elaine, thank you so much. And that makes a really good point that we do need to bring more joy into our life. And sometimes just silly slapstick comedy can make you forget for a moment things that are going on. And like you said, it helps to raise your vibration. So that's really important. So thank you again, Elaine, for being on the show and sharing all that you have with our listeners today.
Well, thank you so much for having me, Linda. Thank you so much.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Now, folks, again, if you want to follow us, we're on Twitter, Facebook, and our website. Again, that's Empower Radio Show. That's the letter M, the word power, radio show. I want to leave you with the Empower thought of the day. Believe that life is worth living. Any way you believe will help create that fact. So just believe, like Elaine was saying, just raising your vibration, believe that it's worth living, and you will help to create that fact. That's a quote by William James. Again, thanks so much, folks, for joining us today. Have a great week, and we look forward to having you next time.
As we close our show today, we want you to know it's time. The time is now for you to cast off the chains of mediocrity and reach for that brass ring. The time is now for taking that giant leap to start a business. Step out of your comfort zone and become the you that you've always dreamed of being. Be sure to follow us on Twitter at Empower Radio Show. That's at MPOWERRADIOSHOW. Thank you for being with us today on the Empower Radio Show.